Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, and welcome to Indie Streak. My name is Rachel Galvin, and as you know, I interview film industry professionals on this show. And if you've missed any of my shows, you can go back and listen to the archives. I've interviewed a wide array of individuals, from filmmakers to writers, composers, actors, etc. And I hope everybody enjoyed their Thanksgiving break. As you know, I wasn't on last week because I was in Los Angeles doing the Hollywood Christmas Parade. I was actually hosting there. Well, today I'm interviewing Victor Viau, and I probably pronounced his last name incorrectly, director of Nina's Dowry, which won Best Film in the Fort Lauderdale International Film Festival. And I think I have him on the line. Let me check here. Victor, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi.
Hi, good morning. How are you? Oh, it's good afternoon.
Good morning.
For you.
Well, I guess technically it's afternoon, although for me it's still morning because I get up late.
Okay, great.
Well, I was watching your film on the plane going from Florida to Las Vegas. I watched the screener, and it was such a powerful movie, and I was watching it and thinking, I don't know if those people behind me should be seeing part of this because there's some graphic parts to the movie. It's very powerful. What made you decide to do this film?
It's based on a true story. My cousin told me this story about 9 years ago, something that happened to her, and I was so moved by it that I felt that it was, you know, a responsibility to tell a story like that.
Wow, so this actually happened to your cousin?
Yes, it did.
Wow. Now, where did the filming take place?
All of it took place in Cameroon, in the northwest province of Cameroon in West Central Africa.
And is that where your cousin lived?
Yes, it is. So we actually shot most of the scenes exactly where the events happened. You know, believe it or not, you know, we actually tamed down, you know, some of the things that happened to her. You know, the film is actually a tamed down version of her experience.
Oh, my gosh. She must be a really strong woman to have undergone all of that.
I believe that she is because, you know, when it happened to her, I actually met her a few years. I saw her a few years after it happened to her, and I had no idea something like that had happened to her. So it was when I was back in Cameroon visiting, and she insisted on seeing me. I went over. I had no idea that's what she wanted to tell me. She went on and like related what had happened to her, and I was just dumbstruck. I could not believe it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's shocking. And this really shows you part of the culture, I guess, over there, too. Is it like that still today?
I would say still like that still today because this is something that happened to her, I would say, maybe 10, 11 years ago. But then, you know, when I was preparing to do the movie, I did some research, and I interviewed people, I talked to people, and it's really nothing has really changed since then.
Wow. It really was an eye-opener to what goes on in other parts of the world like that and the role of women in other countries. It was really interesting to me. For those that haven't seen the movie, why don't you give us a little plot description? Because we're going on about it, and some people haven't seen it, of course. So why don't you tell us a little bit about the plot so that everybody knows?
Okay. So I'll give a brief version, and then I'll explain a little bit more. So the story is about a runaway wife who finds out that, you know, she's pregnant, whose husband finds out that she's pregnant, and he comes with his friends to collect the dowry he paid or take home the woman that he owns, you know, by any means necessary. So the thing is, you know, Nina, you know, in the movie, she lives with her husband, you know, who makes very little, and he spends his money on beer. And what happens was that, you know, and he abuses her a lot. So every time that he abuses her, mm-hmm. every time that she runs away, the family sends her back, you know, to him. So this last time, you know, she runs, and when the father dies, she refuses to go back. And so when she refuses to go back, she starts a restaurant to try to support herself. But then when the husband hears that, you know, she's pregnant, he comes with his friends, and he demands his money. Of course, she doesn't have that kind of money because, you know, dowries, you know, bride price, you know, they're like large sums of money, and she does not have that kind of money. So he decides to, like, beat her up and drag her through the squares, and no one says anything in the village because, you know, it's customary. You know, it's believed that, you know, the woman is the man's property. And so nobody intervenes, you know, nobody intervenes. And so she figures that she has to find a way to get out of it before, you know, because she knows that, you know, it's, her life is at stake if she goes all the way back to his house.
Absolutely, yeah. And her children's life seem to be at stake too.
The children are also at stake. And I know that, you know, some people, we, at least when we're preparing the movie, there were questions about, oh, does she care about, you know, doesn't she care about the children, for her to leave the children behind? But I feel like, you know, she had to make a decision. You know, it's either her life or, you know, because if she loses her life, there's no way that she can protect her children.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah. So she was planning to go back. Now, did that actually happen also to your cousin? Did she leave children behind?
She did. She left children. She actually had more children. You know, she has 5 children, and she left mm-hmm. all of them behind, you know. So it's when
wow.
I started talking to her that, you know, I made it, I made arrangements for her to see her children, because she was still very worried. She was still very scared of her husband. So I made arrangements
mm-hmm.
for her to meet her children and try to be, you know, to be a part of her children's life again.
Oh, that's great.
Yes.
Wow. Do you go back and forth between, you're in Los Angeles now, aren't you?
Yes, I am. The last few years I've been going back and forth, you know, between Cameroon and Los Angeles.
Now, you're from there, right?
Yes, I am.
You're and how long have you been in America?
Oh, my, I've been in America going on 20 years. I came to America to study mathematics and engineering, but then I kind of veered off towards writing and filmmaking, because that's what my true calling is.
Yeah, how did that come about? Did you go to school for it? Did you kind of teach yourself?
Actually, I went to school for it. What happened was, growing up, I was always interested in storytelling and in writing, but I didn't know that you could study that. So when I came to the U.S., I came to study electrical engineering. But while I was in college, mm-hmm. I found that you could actually take screenwriting credits and get credited for it. So I was amazed. I took it and I loved it, and I decided that after my undergrad, I would love to pursue writing. So I actually went to the University of Miami to study creative writing, and then later I went to USC to study filmmaking.
Oh, great. And then you had a short film that you actually presented at the Fort Lauderdale International Film Festival, and I'll probably pronounce it incorrectly. Is it Mumbutuku?
Well, that's quite good. By the way, you did very well pronouncing my name in the beginning.
Oh, good, good.
You did wonderfully, yeah. So it's Mumbutuku. It was my thesis film at USC, and yeah, it won at Fort Lauderdale, you know, almost 10 years ago.
That it was in 2002. It was for the Kodak International Student Film Competition that you won.
Yes, yes.
So was it nice coming back to the Fort Lauderdale International Film Festival?
Oh, it was wonderful, because what happened was, when my film actually played there in 2002, I was unable to attend the festival. Although they flew me, Kodak had a program where they flew the winners back the following year to judge the festival. So I went back the following year when my film wasn't playing to actually judge the festival, and it was wonderful. So I really enjoyed being back there again this year.
And you ended up winning the best film in the festival. What did you think about that? You seemed very emotional about winning.
Oh, my. That was, you know, I was speechless, you know, because, you know, all the obstacles that we endured in order to make the movie over the years, you know, so many obstacles, you know, some of them just totally insurmountable. And to end up winning a festival, you know, to just end up playing at a festival, to me, that was already, you know, a major, major win for us. And then to win, you know, for Nina, for the lead, for Vivian to win the Best Foreign Actress Award, and then the film to win the Best Film Award, it was just amazing. It was amazing.
Now, was this her first role?
This is her very first role.
Acting?
Well, she did like little roles on stage, you know, in skits, you know, like 2-3 minute skits that they put up at the university in Boya. But this is like her first role, you know, and then it was like a leading role,
wow.
And she was just amazing, yes.
Yeah, it was so natural.
Yes.
All of the actors were really good.
Thank you, thank you.
And were they all from Africa?
Everybody was from Africa. Everybody was from Cameroon. Almost everybody, they're all from either Boya, Bamenda, or Sabga, the whole cast.
Now, were they professional actors, or were some of them just people that wanted to be involved?
Just who want to be involved. No professional actors at all. You know, none of them are professional actors. There are a few of them who would love to be professional actors, who are like aspiring, because we have a budding film industry where we usually make movies that are usually straight to video. So many of them are trying to get involved in that, and it's not easy. So with the success of a movie like this, I think it's going to open up more opportunities for them and for their films.
Yeah, I think that maybe because they weren't professional actors, that kind of added a lot of natural quality to their ability.
I think so, too.
They were so great, you know.
Yeah, thank you.
I would never have known that they weren't actors.
No, they were not.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah,
How long did it take you to shoot? You said it took you a long time, right?
Oh, yes, it did. You know, actually, I was told this, my cousin told me this in 2003, her experience, and I decided to do a documentary, but I always knew I wanted to do a feature. I shot a documentary that I never edited. I'm now editing it. I would like to have like a 15 to 30 minute piece that's like an act, that's like a companion to the feature. But then I decided in 2007 that I would love to make this feature. And, you know, we bought some equipment, you know, shipped the container to Cameroon, thinking that it would cost about $1,000 or $2,000 to clear the container. It ended up costing between $25,000 and $30,000 to clear that container. So I was wiped, you know, in 2008. I could not film. I returned. I could not film at the end of 2008. So I got a friend of mine in England, Dr. Ndumu, to come on board. And it's with money that he put in that I was able to return in January 2010 to film. But even then, we did not film because the camera was supposed to arrive. Actually, it did arrive Cameroon February 5th, but we tried to collect it, and they said, no, we're collecting it at the warehouse in Douala. We should go to the delivery point in Bamenda. When we went there, the camera never showed up. So we lost our camera.
Boy.
You know, it turns out that, you know, DHL Cameroon stole our camera. And
then
the production van that we depended on, you know, the engine of it fell in the freeway as we were driving to the location. So we didn't have a van. And 2 days after we finished, you know, building our main set, it burned down. So at one point, we didn't have a camera, we didn't have a production vehicle, and we didn't have our main set. And all the cast and crew were all assembled on location. So I held them on location for 2 months while waiting for a replacement camera. So we ended up filming. We started filming, I believe it was March 28th, and we went all the way to May 15th.
Wow.
Yes.
That's great. The fact that they stuck with you through all that is great.
And you
did it.
Yes.
Wow. Now, did you storyboard this out? Did you do it like that, or was it more natural where you kind of went with where the actors wanted to take it?
I kind of went where the actors wanted to take it. You know, it was, you know, we did a lot of kind of rehearsal work. Even I had Anurin, you know, the villain who played Murphy, and Vivian. They worked quite a bit on their own. You know, Anurin and I had talked about the whole script, you know. We went through it, we discussed it, and then I let he and Vivian, you know, work on it, you know. So they put a lot of, like, work on their own, and then we would discuss every scene. You know, we would break it down. Again, we were doing a lot of translating because it was written in English, but then at some point they speak in English, they speak in Pidgin English, they speak in Babanki. And so we did a lot of work like that, you know, prepping for the shoot.
Did you also work with the actors emotionally as a director on the set? Did you kind of help them get their motivation and all of those types of things?
Oh, yes, I did. You know, and one of the things that we did was, you know, I always try to go back to try to place ourselves in the position, in Evelyn's position. You know, my cousin is Evelyn. So we would go back, what would she have done? You know, what could she have done? You know, so we explored it emotionally. Where would she be emotionally? What happened before? you know, each scene, what had happened before and what's happening and where, you know, the scene is going emotionally. So we try to place everything so that we had like a map, like an emotional map of the whole movie, the way we want the arcs to go.
Yeah. Kind of like the character arc of where each character was going to go.
Yes.
That's great. And she makes a huge arc where she overcomes a lot of her fears to escape also.
Yes, she does.
Now, what do you hope people get out of watching this? Because it's such a powerful movie for women. Was that kind of your intent, or did you just want to tell the story, or was it a combination of both?
It's a combination of both. I want to tell the story, but I'm hoping that it starts a conversation, you know, around the world, but mostly in Cameroon. Because if we can start a conversation where we can look at, you know, the way women are treated, because this is actually not limited to Cameroon, which is one of the most wonderful things about the screenings in Florida, because I met people who responded very passionately to the movie and who told me that I should not for a second believe that such things happen only in Cameroon. You know, and they were very passionate, they were very forceful, and they said that it was very important that, you know, I made sure that this movie gets seen around, you know, around the world. And they had wonderful suggestions on how to get that going, you know. They were like, you know, research celebrities and their causes and try to get the movie to some celebrities. They had some names that they threw out, you know. They said, get it to Oprah, get it to Hillary Clinton, which I think is very difficult to do. Yeah. But I would love for a conversation to start where issues like this are dealt with, because it's so ingrained in the society and in the belief system that, you know, people don't think about it at all. You know, it's just assumed that that's how it's supposed to be.
Yeah, and I'm sure that in Cameroon, it seemed like they were very isolated, where they don't see the outside world. Is that true?
That's true. You know, in some of the villages, especially, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, things are opening up in terms of exposure to the rest of the world. But we're talking about exposure to the rest of the world that, you know, they're really exposed to, yes, to technology, to some, you know, development and some, you know, some advances. But the thing is, they're not really that exposed to the thinking, you know, because it is still very strongly believed in many villages that women are the property of men. For example, you know, talking to people as recently as 2010 about why is it, I'm asking them, why is it that, you know, the children, you know, Vivian's children didn't, I'm sorry, Evelyn's children didn't stay with Evelyn. Why is it that they're with the father? And every person without blinking told me that the children belong to the father. So it's not a debate. It isn't something you take to court and try to figure out, you know, custody issues. There are no custody questions about this. You know, children belong to the father, period.
Wow. Yeah, it's interesting the way different cultures think about things.
Yeah.
It's really an interesting thing. And it's a very fine line to walk on to try to make change, because like you said, it's so ingrained, and who's to say what portions are correct and what portions are not correct, you know? So some things are just the culture and some really need to be changed.
Well, thank you very much for saying that, because that's a very important point, because that's one of the reasons why I want it to also be looked at as a movie, because I don't necessarily want it to be looked at campaign where I am out there trying to, like, you know, push a political view or some propaganda. No, I really just want to, like, you know, stir a debate, you know. And I'm glad that you say that, you know, who is to say what is right or what is wrong, because it's not like I'm trying to vilify, you know, Cameroon or vilify African culture. No, I'm not.
Because that's part of you too.
Yes, it is. And which is one of the reasons why I felt compelled to tell the story, because the part of the story that really made me feel like I had to tell it was when she was beaten and dragged through that square. I grew up in the village, in that village. I grew up in that square. I go there almost every year. So I was questioning myself, so would I have also stayed quiet? Would I have watched her being beaten and dragged through that square? You know, that's one of the reasons why I'm like, wow, I really have to tell the story.
Yeah, it really brings up questions like, what would you do if you were in that situation? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And now, when you were trying to get the budget for this, I know you did a Kickstarter campaign, didn't you?
I did. It's funny because I've been telling people, you know, about a year ago, the movie was essentially dead. It was stuck. You know, I was hiding on the show. I had spent as much as I could on it. I had borrowed and I was in debt. So it had been on show for about a year. We kind of picture locked November 28, 2010, but we had no funds to continue. So one of my co-workers, Daniel Tan, you know, read a blog on it on the Global Film Initiative website and decided to, like, you know, take a look at the cut. And he loved what he saw, and he decided to come on board as an investor with a little bit of money. And then, more important than the money, that he came up with the idea. So he was the one who came up with the idea for us, to run a crowdfunding campaign. And and he was just wonderful because he came on board as a post-production supervisor, and it's really because of him that the movie got, you know, we ended up finishing the movie. So we ran the campaign in March, and it was successful. We were able to raise the money we needed to finish the movie.
Great. So Kickstarter, you think, was helpful?
Oh, that's, it was very, very helpful. Oh, yes. Yes, it is. You know, Kickstarter was very, very helpful.
Okay. Now, is this going on to other festivals?
That's the plan. Right now, we're submitting. What we kind of did, we kind of held it back because we're premiering in Fort Lauderdale. And so now I'm submitting to other festivals. So hopefully in the next couple of months, we'll find out where else it's going to play.
Okay. And in the meantime, is there a website you can give for people to check out so that they know where it's going to show next?
Oh,
yeah. Are you putting up on the website?
So,
okay.
Oh, yes. So we have a website, www.ninasdiary.com. So Nina is spelled with an H, so it's N-I-N-A-H-S. So there's no apostrophe for the website, you know, so it's ninasdiary.com.
Okay, okay.
Yes.
And are you working on, besides just promoting this, are you working on anything else right now? Are you working on any of the films, or are you just doing this one?
Well, yes, I'm working on it. I have a script called 50-50. We're actually going to change the script, because this is a script that I've had for years, and since then, you know, they made a movie a couple of years ago named 50-50. So I'll probably change the title of the film, but that, I'm hoping that will be the next project. That will be the next project.
And what is this film about?
It's about a U.S. educated woman who returns to her village to find that her mom's house was seized when her father died because women cannot inherit property. And so in trying to recover the house, she ends up organizing a women's rebellion against the chief and the chauvinist men of the village.
So it's another kind of women's movie.
It is.
Okay, great. I like that.
Yeah.
Now, if you were going to make your movie again, would there be things that you would change in the way that it was made?
I would change certain. I mean, there were certain things that I wanted. For example, the season in which it was shot. It was always intended to be shot in the dry season. But on three different occasions, you know, we, in trying to make it, the dry season came and went. So we ended up shooting in the rainy season. So the dry season was very important to me for the look of the film. We were able to get some of that, you know, when we timed it in post-production. But then I would really have loved to shoot the movie in the dry season because the look is so very different. It's much harsher.
It's much harsher?
Yes. The dry season is very harsh. You know, the grass is dry. The air is kind of like filled with haze and, you know, ash from burning grass, you know, things like that.
Okay.
Yes.
Was it very hot? Were the conditions really difficult to film in? As it was?
You mean in terms of the weather condition?
Uh-huh.
Oh, yes, the conditions were difficult because, you know, shooting in the rainy season is tough because the rain comes when they want to come. You know, we have no control over that. We don't have the kind of budget that we can block off, you know, location. So we would shoot right out there in the open. We can't stop cars from moving by. So we would deal with, like, noise. We would deal with, you know, there were scenes that we shot a couple of times. We would start shooting and fog would come in. So we would shoot in fog, but then the look would be so wrong that we would reschedule and shoot the whole scene over. You know, there were scenes that we shot in two different locations because one location, after shooting, we figured, you know, it doesn't really fit with what we're trying to do. So we had to, like, go to a different location and shoot the scene.
Wow.
Yeah.
What would be your advice for directors who want to make a film?
Oh, my advice would be an advice that I heard from Stephen Frears. years ago, it's very simple. You know, it's a very, very simple advice that's kind of frustrating, because when you meet a filmmaker, you want to hear, you know, them give this great wisdom about filmmaking and so on. But then he just had one advice that he kept repeating for like an hour of lecture, and that left me very frustrated. But I didn't get the full meaning of what he was saying until I tried to make, you know, Nina's Diary. And the advice is just find a way to do it. You know, find a way to make the movie. Just find a way to make the movie. You know, find a way. Yes.
Yeah, that seems to be what to do.
Yeah.
Have there been some filmmakers that have inspired you along the way that have kind of helped you in your style, or that you just saw them and said, boy, I want to do that?
Oh, yes. One of the main filmmakers that inspired me is actually a Cameroonian filmmaker called Jean-Pierre Bekolo. He made a movie at a critical point called Katia Mossad, at a point where I was trying to figure out, should I stay with engineering or should I get into filmmaking? And when I saw that movie, I was like, wow, these are the kind of movies that I want to make, you know. And I decided to, like, switch, you know, when I graduated from undergraduate. So Jean-Pierre Bekolo, you know, is an inspiration. Worldwide, you know, I am inspired by the work of the Coen brothers. I'm inspired by the work of Jean Gimo. I feel like I feel like the movie that I tell and the stories that I'm drawn to are kind of similar to the stories that Jean Gimo makes.
Mhm.
Yes.
Did you see any films that you really liked at the film festival this year?
Unfortunately, I didn't get to see films at the festival because many of the films, you know, we were kind of scheduled around when we were screening. But there are some films that, you know, I have since followed that, you know, I love. You know, a film like Una Noche, you know, it's a wonderful, wonderful film. Yes.
Yeah, hopefully I'll have her on to interview her, too, at some
That'll
point. I talked to her about that.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Yes.
Are there any actors that you'd really like to work with?
Oh, yes. Oh, my. You know. Hello? Oh, I thought I was losing you. Oh, you know, I thought I was losing you for a second. Yeah, I would love to work again with, first of all, the cast of Nina's Diary. I would love to work with all of them again. You know, they're like at the top of my list because these are people who are dedicated, very passionate, you know, and I would love to work with them anytime. You know, outside of that, I actually really wanted to, I was hoping that I would work with Jada Pinkett, you know, because when I was trying to make 50-50, I felt like she captured the spirit of Nina in that role.
Yeah.
I mean, Whoopi Goldberg, I would love to work with people like that, you know. Halle Berry, you know, they're just, you know, and in terms of African actors, you know, there are many of them that I would love to work with.
Yeah, I'm sure that, you know, anybody would love to be in one of your projects that after this came out. You know, this is such a powerful film, like I said. So have you had people approach you since this movie came out and you won the award, or is it too soon?
Maybe it's too soon because nobody has approached me yet, but I've had a couple of inquiries from a couple of festivals who would like to, like, take a look at the movie, take a look at a screener.
Yeah, I bet after winning the best film, I'm sure that you'll get a lot of people that are interested. I hope it shows at more festivals.
I hope so.
Is there another website that you want to give about yourself? Do you have any other social media, like Facebook or anything that you want to give out for people?
Yes, Nina Diary is on Facebook, and I am actually working on a website, like a personal website and a website for the film company, Fit to Film. So at a later time, I'll have all of that information on Nina's Diary website.
Okay, great.
Yes.
Okay, well, we're running out of time. Is there anything else that you'd like to say before we go?
Well, first of all, thank you very much, you know, for the interview. It's always wonderful. You know, we count on interviews like this to get the word out about, you know, small little movies like our movie. And it would be wonderful, you know, if people can check it out now and later on when we have it on DVD. So they should just, you know, keep checking Nina's Diary out, and we'll have more information in future.
Okay, great. Thanks for being on, Victor. I'm really glad that I got the chance to bring you on and that I got to see your film. It was, like I said, it was so powerful. It's I really recommend it for everybody. So
thank you.
Thank you so much, Victor, and I'll talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon, Victor. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye. Okay, whoops, I cut him off a little bit there. That was Victor, and honestly, his movie is so powerful. I couldn't believe it, really, watching it. Like I said, I was watching it on the plane, and there are a lot of scenes where it's a little graphic, where the husband is abusing the wife and the kids, and, you know, kind of makes you cringe watching that. And, I mean, it's amazing what this woman went through, and the fact that this was a true story is just unbelievable. And it really opens your eyes to the plight of women in other parts of the world. Kind of like, this movie kind of is like a different, completely different way, but a couple weeks ago I interviewed the director of Pearls on the Ocean Floor, which talks about the plight of women in Iran. So it's interesting to me to see a film like that and see the plight of women in other areas, and it makes me thankful I'm here in the United States. But I think it's important for people to get out and see these movies and see what's going on. And then also, besides that, the courage that this woman showed is really an inspiration for women anywhere. So I really recommend anyone going to see Nina's Dowry. Just keep in mind it is a little graphic, but I think it's worth seeing. So once it comes out on DVD, I recommend checking it out. Okay, guys. Well, thanks for tuning in again today. If you're a filmmaker out there and you're listening and you would like to be on the show, please email me. My email address is ravenprods, like Raven Productions, RAVENPRODS at yahoo.com. And let me know what your film is about and what you're about, and I'd be happy to talk to you about coming on board on the show at some point on a Sunday. In the meantime, also please go on our Facebook to Indie Streak, just like the show, Indie Streak, IndieStreak. Look that up on Facebook, and please like the page, because I do put castings and events and different things, tidbits that I usually don't put anywhere else, up on there, so you can check that out as well. And I am starting to repost on my blog, too. I might as well give you that again. It's www.independentstreak.ning, N-I-N-G.com. So that's kind of a long name, but I have some pictures up there from the film festival and some tidbits, some blogs, some reviews, film reviews. I've got, I went to an event last night, a private screening for Not for Human Consumption, directed by Chris Alonso, who I interviewed here on the show. Another great movie, which took place right here in West Palm Beach, Florida. That film is going to be premiering soon, and I will be letting people know when that premieres. I don't have any kind of dates for that yet, but it will be hitting the film circuit also. And if you missed that interview with Chris Alonso, you can go back and listen to it in the archives. But what a great movie that was also, and I got a chance to hang out with the cast and crew of the film last night at Cinema Paradiso. It was just for family and friends. It wasn't the official premiere. But guys, thank you again for tuning in, and I will be back next week, same time, 1 o'clock on Sunday, and you never know who I'll be interviewing next, so please tune in then. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.